Hello, and welcome to everyone watching or listening online, and welcome to everyone gathered here today. It is such a blessing that we can, both in person and online, connect in this way. And today, we're entering the home stretch of the series of teachings I've been doing on the fruit of the Spirit, with just a few weeks left. And I want to introduce today's fruit by asking you to imagine a worst-case scenario for your life. Imagine that you have made a big mess of your life. You've made a huge mistake, committed a terrible sin. I'll let you define terrible sin for yourself. And so bad is your boo-boo bonanza that it renders you unconscious. Now, think about the person you first want to see sitting next to your bed when you wake up to the mess you've made of your life. Whose face do you first want to see? Now, it's likely you also are thinking of some people whose faces you do not want to see when you wake up. It'd be the last person you want to see, but who's the first face you want to see? I can almost guarantee you that the person whose face you want to see first embodies the fruit of the Spirit that Paul calls gentleness. The word he uses in the original language can be translated, of course, as gentleness, but also as meekness. That's how the old King James translated it. It could also be translated as humility. And in the ancient world, gentleness was considered a lesser virtue. It was good, it was admirable, it was worth pursuing, but there were other more important virtues. But humility was not considered to be a virtue at all. Humility was ridiculed. And yet, gentleness, meekness, humility were defining characteristics of Jesus' ministry, his way of life. Now, when we say that Jesus was gentle or he was meek, that absolutely does not mean that he was weak. It means, rather, that he exercised a different kind of power than the stereotypical Greco-Roman hero. It means that Jesus was never auditioning to be a modern-day action movie star. He was not harsh. He was not violent. He was rarely, with a few exceptions, cleansing of the temple. He was rarely what we would consider to be aggressive. He was strong. He was firm. He was bold. He was courageous. He could be forceful. But he was not harsh. He was not braggadocious. He didn't lead with bravado. In fact, it was just the opposite. He really didn't want too many people to know what he was doing early on. When he would heal others, he would ask them to keep it a secret. Like, I don't want too many people to find out about this. He wasn't into self-promotion. You can't imagine Jesus posting a selfie on Instagram with the caption saying something like, "Hey, I just fed 5,000 people with a few loaves and fish. And now I'm going to go for a stroll on the water to cap it off. Hashtag follow me." It wasn't his style. Matthew chapter 12, after Jesus has healed a bunch of people and he's asked all of them to keep it quiet, Matthew describes Jesus by quoting a passage from Isaiah 42. And this is what the prophet and this is what Matthew says about Jesus. It says, "Here's my servant whom I have chosen, the one I love, in whom I delight. I will put my spirit on him, and he will proclaim justice to the nations. Jesus is the anointed one. Jesus is the one we've been waiting for. He's the one who will bring God's justice into the world. But not in the way that anyone expected, even though it was there in the prophet Isaiah. The prophet continues. Says, he will not quarrel or cry out. No one will hear his voice in the streets. He downplays his public role. A bruised reed he will not break, and a smoldering wick he will not snuff out, till he has brought justice through to victory. In his name, the nations will put their hope. I love this line. A bruised reed, a fragile stalk, a tender shoot growing in your garden. He won't break it. A smoldering wick, a flickering flame, fire that's just about to go out, deprived of oxygen, be so careful. He will not snuff it out. He will not blow it out. He's bringing justice into the world. He'll win a victory. But he's so gentle. The broken, the hurting, the weary, the bruised, those who are just barely hanging on, they're safe in the hands of Christ. He will not break you. He will not snuff you out. It's Jesus' face that you want to see when you wake up to the mess you've made of your life. Because in the face of Jesus and in the presence of Jesus, you experience the tenderness, the tender heart of God. David talked about God's tender heart back in the Hebrew Scriptures in Psalm 103. It talks about God being compassionate. It says, beginning of verse 8, the Lord is compassionate and gracious, slow to anger, abounding in love. Familiar phrases as we've worked through this series and descriptions of God in the Psalms. And then David says, he does not treat us as our sins deserve, or repay us according to our iniquities. He's full of grace and mercy. And then he goes on to say, as a father has compassion on his children, so the Lord has compassion on those who fear him, who honor him. For the Lord knows how we're formed. He remembers that we are dust. The life of mortals is like grass. They flourish like a flower in the field. Then the wind blows over it and it's gone. And its place remembers it no more. David's experience with God. And remember, David was a pretty big sinner. Did some pretty bad things. David's experience with God is he is still tender-hearted and compassionate toward his children because he knows how fragile we are. He knows we're but dust and we blow away in a strong wind. The Lord is gentle with his people because he knows we can only handle so much. One of the obstacles that can keep gentleness, Christ-like gentleness, from growing in our lives is the way our society tends to reward those who are really good at identifying and then exploiting weakness in others in order to get ahead, to gain an advantage, or to win. Aren't we to some degree trained? That's what you got to do to get ahead. That's what you got to do to make it. That's what you got to do to gain a competitive advantage. You got to look for someone else's weakness, someone else's frailty, and then take advantage of it for your benefit. It's just the way the world works. And we learn it at an early age, and we learn it in the most innocuous of ways. It's the way we play games. It's the way we engage in athletics, and then it translates over into other areas of life. It's hard not to do it, especially if you want to win. Heather's been playing tennis for years, and she's recently convinced me to start going to drills with her. I have not been playing tennis for years. She calls it a marriage builder. I call it something else. I'm not saying I'm bad at tennis, but I'm not good at tennis. But a couple of weeks ago, we were at a drill, and there was a guy there for the drill who was actually bad at tennis. This guy was terrible. He hit the ball with every part of his racket except the strings. And the ball is landing everywhere but on the court. Now, I'm not good at tennis, but I know how to play a game. And so what happened in this drill is we divided into two teams on separate sides of the net, and we're hitting the ball back and forth to each other trying to score points. And it didn't take me long to figure out if we want to score points, just hit the ball to that guy. Hit the ball to that guy. And because that's what you do. You identify a weakness and you exploit it. That's how winning is done. But it's not how Jesus wins. It's not the way he achieved his victory. Paul says in Philippians 2 that Christ did not exploit his advantage as the Son of God. He did not misuse or abuse his power, his status as the Son of God. Instead, he emptied himself and became a servant, even a slave, dying on a cross, humbled himself completely, disgraced himself completely for the sake of others, including those who were using what they thought was their power over him to gain an advantage and advance their agenda. And that's how Jesus won. It is a huge mistake to assume that because we say Jesus is gentle or meek, that he was weak. He wasn't, but he did exercise power in a different way. He exercised what one writer calls lamb power, not lion power, lamb power. It's an image based on that scene in Revelation 5 when the question is asked, who is worthy to open this scroll? And this scroll is God's plan for dealing with evil, for overcoming evil in the world. Who is worthy to open this scroll? And the answer is the Lion of the tribe of Judah is worthy. And when the lion steps up to open God's scroll, the lion is a lamb, slaughtered and yet alive. God's plan to overcome evil in the world. God initiates new creation. God starts putting what is broken by sin back together again by the power of the Lamb. It's lamb power, not lion power. It's the self-giving, sacrificial love of a humble, gentle king who rides into town not on a war horse but on a donkey, and who establishes his kingdom not with his sword but from the cross. It's lamb power. It's humble, gentle, self-giving, sacrificial lamb power, and it is the most powerful force in the world, and it is the hope of the world. One of the ways we cultivate our own lamb power by following Jesus, cultivate gentleness, is by cultivating humility, because there's always a connection. Humility is the prerequisite to gentleness. Think about it. In my experience, the arrogant are rarely gentle. And the humble are rarely harsh. Maybe there are some exceptions, but if gentleness is a struggle or a challenge for you, I can almost guarantee that arrogance or self-righteousness or hubris is an underlying problem. And so we grow in gentleness toward others by learning humility. We grow in gentleness toward others by humbling ourselves. And if we aren't humbling ourselves, then we will be humbled. I know this from experience. I felt so good about myself after taking advantage of that guy who was terrible at tennis. And then the next drill, he wasn't there. We're divided into teams, across the net, winning points. And I realized midway through, everybody on the other side of the net keeps hitting the ball to me. Wait, what is happening here? I think I'm the weakest player on the court, and they're taking advantage of my, and this is not any fun. And I thought about that guy. And I thought, if he comes back again, I'm still going to hit the ball to him, but I am not going to feel good about it. Because as we grow, learn humility, or we, as we are humbled, we then learn to extend gentleness toward others. The more aware we are of our own frailty, the more likely we are to extend gentleness to others. I said aware of our frailty, aware. Some of the meanest, nastiest, harshest people you will ever meet in life are actually the most fragile. They just don't know it, or they refuse to admit it. And so sometimes before we can be gentle with others, we have to be humbled by God. You remember that story when the religious leaders in John chapter 8, they try to trap Jesus by bringing before him a woman who's been caught in adultery. And what they really want is for Jesus to give them permission to stone her so they can then turn him into the authorities because he's a troublemaker. They set this trap for him, but Jesus does not step into it. Instead, what he does is set a gentle trap of his own. He's sneaky. He says, you want to stone her? Go ahead. But let whoever among you is without sin pick up the first rock and throw it. And it was a gotcha moment. And they all eventually slinked away because they knew they were not qualified to condemn anyone. And Jesus doesn't condemn her either. He's not harsh with her. He does not pick up a stone so he can throw it at her, even though he's without sin. He does, truthfully, but still gently, challenge her to leave her life of sin. As we become aware, more aware of our own shortcomings, our own sins, our own frailty, we become better equipped to be gentle to others. It's our awareness of our own sins and shortcomings that allow us to be gentle with others in response to their sins and shortcomings. I think this is part of what Paul is getting at the end of Galatians 5. After he lists the fruit of the Spirit, he has some more instructions for the Christians in Galatia. And he says, beginning in verse 29, not 26, 29, he says, let us not become conceited. Let's not be arrogant about this, provoking and envying each other. Brothers and sisters, if someone is caught in a sin, you who live by the Spirit should restore that person gently. Not you who live by the Spirit should throw the book at them. Not you who live by the Spirit should stand over them and warn them and tell them how much trouble they're in. Restore them gently. And then he continues by saying, and watch yourselves as you do this, or you also may be tempted. Be careful as you're helping someone else out of the pit that you don't fall into the pit yourself. Carry each other's burdens, and in this way you will fulfill the law of Christ. But if anyone thinks they are something when they are not, they deceive themselves. There's always this connection between humility before God and gentleness toward others. I'm convinced one of the reasons that more and more people seem less and less interested in organized Christianity, that one of the reasons that the message of the gospel, which is supposed to be good news for all, and the witness of the church, which is supposed to be the embodiment of Christ on earth, has less and less credibility in our culture, is because there is a broad swath of folks who call themselves Christians, who say they're following Christ, who have forgotten or lost touch with what it is that makes Jesus so attractive to broken-hearted, hurting people. What we all need to hear today, what we all need to hear anew, is the invitation from Jesus to all the bruised reeds around him. It's an invitation he offers in contrast to the religious leaders, especially the Pharisees, whose harsh rhetoric, harsh demands, harsh way of life was grinding the people around them into a fine powder that would blow away in the wind. Jesus instead offers this invitation. He says, come to me. You come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke, my way of life, upon you and learn from me. For I am gentle and humble in heart. And you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden, it's light. As we respond to this invitation from Jesus, don't we need this invitation as much as anyone? Aren't we also bruised reeds? Can't some of us say that our wick is about to go out? We don't know how much longer we can hang on. We're just so tired, so frustrated, so weary. As we respond to this invitation from Christ, and as we draw near to him, and as we learn his way of life from him, may the Spirit of God grow in us the fruit of gentleness. The fruit of gentleness in us, so that when our friends and family and neighbors look upon our faces, what they see, what they experience, is the gentleness of Christ. Lamb power, which is the hope of the world. Let's stand and sing.